You're listening to a podcast of Spurious Morality. Hello and welcome to a podcast of Spurious Morality. I'm Johnston and with me I have Gareth. Hello, Gareth.
Hello again.
And we're continuing on the mission. And the mission has a name now. We've called it 275 because 275 is the number of monthly adventures that there are. And we're carrying on with that. So previously we've talked about the first 10 big Finnish releases, and we've kind of talked about how they feel like they are sort of being bold and experimental and treading new ground, but some of them have been ultra traditional as well, and we've kind of had a bit of a mixed bag so far, I think it's fair to say. We've not had anything that's kind of been so bad we've just not been able to talk about it, but we've definitely had some that we've preferred over others. And I suspect with the run we've got today, we're going to continue that theme. Now, we've got some interesting stuff today because we've got the sidesteps and we've got a couple of Dalek stories. I never actually realised sort of how thick and fast they come at you once you start on the genocide machine. Like, all of a sudden it's Daleks every few months. And the first story we're going to discuss is a Dalek story. It's the Apocalypse Element, which is sort of subtitled Dalek Empire Part 2. We mentioned part one last time, and it's quite. I think it's the most ambitious one yet. I think it's the most ambitious big finish yet. I'm going to let you review it before we dive into it, because I suspect whether the ambition pays off or not is perhaps a point that's going to split us somewhat. But yeah, you go first. Okay. Walk us through your review of it.
Okay. This is the dawn of what would become a big finish staple, the massive, smashy Dalek epic. It's pretty much all action from start to finish, with the general level of peril so absurdly high that cliffhangers feel almost arbitrary. The stakes are serious, with a whole galaxy held to ransom and then torched, while the universe hangs in the balance. We've got Daleks invading Gallifrey, future TV showrunners take note, the President getting exterminated, and lovable old Romana held in a Dalek prison for 20 years. Colin Baker rises to all of this. Dalek stories are the ideal companion, so to speak, for Doctors, and he has several great opportunities to rail against their cruelty. It's wonderful to have Lala Ward back, selling, quite convincingly, the toll this has all taken on Romana. There are other nice touches, such as the Doctor's continued disdain for Coordinator Vansell, a little bonus for listeners who previously heard the Sirens of Time, as well as a hint towards Big Finish's growing sense of continuity. All that said, I've got a limited appetite for this kind of Dalek smashiness. The same can be said for the Eric Saywood fare that probably inspired it. Looking at you, Resurrection of the Daleks. The Apocalypse Element is long and even a bit exhausting at points. It relies solely on action and technobabble to keep things moving. It's enjoyable in the moment, but apart from the OMG bullet points, there isn't much to take away from it afterwards. Probably the weakest link is Evelyn. Maggie Stables is game as ever, and the character is having a wonderful time, but that's just it. It's not very believable that someone who saw her first spaceship in the previous story would be so utterly gung-ho among Daleks and Time Lords. Although the plot capitalises on her humanity in a very surface-level way, there's nothing here that speaks to Evelyn as a character. It's an odd choice for her next adventure. On the whole, though, I don't think the Apocalypse Element's flaws stop it doing what it sets out to do, which is to smash Daleks into things. It's an entertaining racket. So I do think the ambition is there, and it's it kind of reminded me a lot of the Sirens of Time in a weird way. Sort of, I felt like it was a better executed version of that kind of story, where you're like, oh my god, massive stuff happening on Gallifrey. And in Sirens, it felt a bit more like this fact was being kind of reported to us, whereas in this, you can't move for it. It's all around you.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've never actually quite made the comparison with Sirens before, but we're sat here talking about release number 11 in this range, and already Gallifrey's been invaded twice. And I've never realised that happens before. I think you're right. I think actually, yes, that it does have quite a lot in common with Sirens. And, you know, as you say, it even brings Vansel back. Is it the same president as well?
I think it is, yeah. I mean, obviously, yeah. He doesn't stick around for the whole thing, but I think so.
It's definitely harking back to Sirens of Time quite a bit, and it's doing something similar. But I agree with you. I think it does it better. Like, we do sort of see it happen, and we see the invasion take place. We don't in Sirens. And the resolution's a little bit less abstract as well. I like the fact that they really didn't have anything for Evelyn to do in this one, so they kind of make her into a bit of a plot device. And again, it works. Like, Evelyn has some great little character moments here. Like, her character's just growing and growing and growing, and she's becoming more and more fantastic while not really having much to do, because there's so much going on sort of around. You know, we've got, first of all, the Daleks completely rip up a peace conference, and then they invade Gallifrey, they destroy a galaxy, they hold everybody else hostage, and it's all a bit bonkers. Like, they just up the stakes so far in this that there's kind of, by the time you get to the end of part three, there's just nowhere for it to go at all. It's just kind of, it's the biggest Doctor Who story at all, performed Doctor Who story at all to date, this is. And I'd actually argue that maybe it hasn't been topped since. Yeah, it's kind of mad. I like what they do with Romana. I like the fact that we've got President Romana, which is a hangover from the New Adventures, I believe, although I've not read any of the New Adventures that do feature President Romana. But it's nice that we've got that here, and it's a direction I'm very happy the character goes in, and I particularly love the Gallifrey series that doesn't really come out of this. It comes out of Zagreus, but this kind of does a bit of foundation work, I guess. I'm supposing here on release 11, they weren't really making plans for spin-off series that would come out of release 50, but it's just nice to have some, you know, Romana on Gallifrey type stuff here. It's kind of a shame there's no K-9 involved. He's definitely missing from this one. I think this is a lot of fun. I think it's really successful. I think it's ambitious, and I think it actually manages to achieve what it sets out to do, which is, as you've said, kind of a more immersive Sirens, a more coherent Sirens, and it has the advantage of Daleks as well, which, it's still only the second appearance in the monthly range. You know, at this stage, the sort of universal Dalek fatigue that a lot of people report to suffer from in 2025, that really wasn't here. They're still a novelty at this point. I'm a big fan of this one. I do think it works. I think it is very sort of silly, action figure-y, mashy-mashy together, fanficky type stuff, but it's just done so bloody well that, fine, I'm here for it, and I'm willing to enjoy the ride. And I think we're definitely, I've said this in a previous release, but I think by this stage, in a previous episode, but I think by this stage, we are definitely sort of seeing the Sixth Doctor as the Doctor that is benefiting the most from Big Finish. I think we're already seeing the Sixth Doctor being Big Finish's Doctor. And I think Evelyn is sort of part of that. It's just a shame that we've kind of had one story that introduced Evelyn that was totally written for her. We've then had a story that we're fairly sure was written for Sarah Jane. And then we've had this one where she's really not got all that much to do. It's a good job we do get some fantastic Evelyn stuff to do sort of further down the line, because at this point, while the character has been wonderful, she's not had a lot to do, has she?
Not really, but this isn't the last release. I mean, I'm a few ahead now, but this isn't the last release where it feels a bit like they've kind of just handed something to Maggie Stables and gone, you know, tear this apart, come on. And she does, you know, she rises to everything just like Colin does. It's just, with the Doctor, it's kind of a lot easier to grasp what the character is going to be. With Evelyn, it kind of should be that simple because she's so well defined in her first appearance. But yeah, it's a little bit scatty. Just to add, you are right, Romana was the Gallifrey president in The New Adventures. Not very much. I think it was mentioned in Happy Endings by Paul Cornell, but they didn't really do a lot of Gallifrey stuff in those books. She comes back as the president, carrying over that New Adventures thing in the BBC books, and I've just got to the point in the series where she's in there, you know, being the president, and she's a much more morally dubious character by that stage in the story. So the version we've got here is a lot more sympathetic. For all that we moan, well, not we, but, you know, for all that people occasionally complain that Romana as president in Big Finish is a very grumpy character, trust me, it could be worse. You don't want the book version. And just a thought on the Daleks as well. I'm still kind of, because I've been reading these books, I'm still kind of thinking that we never get Daleks. So I kind of have the opposite of the sort of Dalek fatigue at the moment, because you only got two novels out of them in BBC books, and you didn't get any at all in Virgin because of licensing. So yeah, it's still quite novel to me that we're having them crop up a few times. And I don't think they overdo it in the main range. I mean, we've got another one to come, obviously, in the next sort of episode we're doing. But yeah, they don't go mad. It's just once they get into box set territory that they Big Finish kind of really spreads its wings on that whole thing. But yeah, at this point, I still think it's kind of novel. And the Apocalypse element, I think it does have its own kind of novelty. When I think back on it, I tend to think, oh God, that release is so noisy. It's just a load of stuff happening. But I think that's a bit harsh, and it is very exciting. And although it is very noisy, it's hard not to get swept up by it. I think once you're listening to it, all of the sort of nitpickiness about it kind of falls away, and you're like, no, this is pretty exciting.
I think that's the point. I think it's good enough to the point where you enjoy it enough to ignore its flaws. And I think that, to be honest, with 90% of fiction, that's probably the aim. The aim isn't to create a perfect piece of work. The aim is to create some paper that's interesting enough to actually cover over the cracks. And it certainly does that here.
Yeah.
Just on the subject of sort of lots of Daleks, so we've got, obviously, Mutant Phase, which we're going to discuss in this very podcast episode. But then I think they disappear, don't they, until Time of the Daleks then. I think we have a good 15 releases without them. Okay, well, we shall move on. We'll move on to the next story, which is The Fires of Vulcan, which is, it's Doctor Who goes to Pompeii before the fires of Pompeii. And I think it tells a pretty interesting story, actually. So we've got Mel at Big Finish now. We've got Mel. Mel has joined the monthly range and is with the Seventh Doctor in this one. I particularly like them using Bonnie Langford because we can have both Sixth Doctor and Seventh Doctor with her in very much the same way we're having Fifth Doctor and Sixth Doctor with Perry. So she's actually one of the more versatile characters available to them at this stage. I quite like that. So Fires of Vulcan is, I think this is the first time, sort of chronologically at least, we see kind of the slightly darker Seventh Doctor, you know, the one that plays about with time a bit and manipulates people and all this kind of thing. It's still a relatively light story, you know, it's perhaps not something you could just drop straight into the middle of season 24. But it's definitely, you know, it has its humorous moments, it has some big characters and all that kind of thing. But it is about, you know, a huge natural disaster that, you know, really did happen, as we know, and it did kill a lot of people. So, yeah, it's a good one, but I will let you review before I continue. Go ahead.
Okay. This one's a bit of a favourite of mine. A pure historical, at least in Doctor Who terms, where acquisition of the TARDIS is the only sci-fi bit. The actual plot is about history, with the Doctor and Mel in Pompeii just before Vesuvius erupts, and the Doctor, knowing that the TARDIS will be buried there, unable to do anything about it. The story works well with these characters in particular. The Seventh Doctor is all about playing chess with people's lives, though admittedly not at this point in the show's run. Here, he finds himself on the receiving end, powerless against history. You could argue that his eventual discovery of some wiggle room gives him the idea to start making history himself. There's still some of that season 24 haphazardness about him for the time being, and some delightfully early Cartmel-esque dialogue about time. Then we have Mel, another one of Big Finish's rehabilitations, this time of an unloved companion. I don't think Steve Lyons changes anything significant. Mel's optimism is central to the plot, and that's very true to the character. It's just a question of how you express that. Mel here is as unstoppable as ever, but Bonnie Langford is able to play her a bit more grown up. There's no screaming and no playing to the gallery, even when she expresses indignation. It's an excellent start to her time in Big Finish. There's not much plot. We don't need it, really. The central dilemma is good enough. The solution is so simple and clever that it always makes me smile. There's also some colourful local and religious fervour to keep the Doctor and Mel sidetracked, and a decent reckoning with the tragedy about to befall this city, not to mention the rules and mores of life in this era. There are a few odd pacing decisions, like the Doctor's off-screen escape from a relentless gladiator, and the TARDIS solution being explained after the fact, but none of that spoils it for me. It's a little gem. I think it is interesting that it's kind of a season 24 release, because that's so synonymous with the kind of abrasive, noisy style of that year, where it's all very almost panto in a sense, and this does pull back a lot from it. I mean, you can't get much more serious, like we saw from New Who. It doesn't get much more kind of nerve-wracking for the Doctor and companion than what do you do about Pompeii. But yeah, Bonnie Langford really kind of immediately shows you, like, oh yeah, she wasn't, if you believe Mel has a problem, Bonnie Langford wasn't the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, season 24 has its own sort of feel and identity, and the temptation must have been when they came to do a Seventh Doctor and Mel story to kind of, you know, let's do Delta again, that kind of thing. But they don't. They kind of play against type with this, and I really, really do think that benefits it. As I say, the humour is still in there. You still do have some farcical elements, and that's fine. That's okay. But it's, you know, it has a more adult tone than season 24 ever did. Like, you know, season 24 is never going to have Mel befriending a character who is essentially a prostitute and that kind of thing. I like this. It's good. It's, well, you know, what if we were to take a TARDIS team associated with sort of high camp, panto, lighthearted type adventures and stuck them into a pretty dark and dismal situation? Season 24 did have its darker moments. You know, it had a busload full of people being murdered by bannermen, and Dragonfire's a bit of a bloodbath, and Paradise Towers has a sort of suitably high body count. But it still doesn't quite do anything like this. So I like the fact that it sort of instantly sets out to go, well, we're Big Finish and we can do things differently here. I also suspect that maybe the team that made this were sort of quite in on the whole received fan wisdom of the time that season 24 is absolutely irredeemable and there's nothing in there to enjoy at all. So why on earth would they want to make that? And I think sort of opinions towards season 24 have perhaps lightened a little bit over the years. And, you know, there is a lot to enjoy in there. I think Paradise Towers is, you know, there's not a lot of Doctor Who that's much better than it, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, it's good, like I say, that they've played against type here, and I think it works, and I really think that the range benefits from the fact that we're doing something different with this TARDIS team as well. We talk a lot about sort of characters that are redeemed by Big Finish. I think the Sixth Doctor, everyone will agree, is the most obvious example, but Mel can't be particularly far behind in that conversation. I think Mel's done very well out of Big Finish, and even into, you know, the box set era that we're in now, has continued to do very well at Big Finish. So, yeah, more Bonnie, please, because it's worked, and she's great in this. She's brilliant.
She even works in kind of the Unbound capacity as well, you know, when she's in He Jests at Scars. It's a very dark and moody story, but she's able to rise to that as well. Something I think is as well that is interesting about Fires of Vulcan is that kind of tone you mentioned, where it's very grim, but it's also very lighthearted. I think that's quite true to the Hartnell era with the historicals back then, because, you know, you look at the Mythmakers, and that's, I think, probably known as, if not the funniest Doctor Who story, certainly script-wise, then it's up there. But it's also a horrific story. It's the horrendous things happen in that historical era. And that whole event is it's no Pompeii, but it's a tragedy. And you look at the Romans, you know, the burning of Rome, you've got gladiators, you've got murders, deaths, all of this. And again, it's this incredibly lighthearted story. And I think to an extent, the Fires of Vulcan is sort of continuing that tradition and going, well, we have got this awful thing happening, but we could also have some kind of quite funny misunderstandings going on as well. And I think if you had to pluck a kind of Doctor Who era later on and kind of make it fit that, in a weird way, season 24 probably is the one to go for, because it does have so much kind of lightheartedness, like you say. And even Paradise Towers is kind of a good example of, like, on the surface, it is very frivolous and glitzy, but, you know, it's got cannibals in it, you know, and it's not a very nice world that it's set in. It's very much, that was something that the kind of Cartmel era really sunk its teeth into as it went on, and, like, Happiness Patrol became that on steroids, really. So yeah, I think it's a good match for all of that. And the other thing I wanted to mention was just the solution, which obviously I've already said I really liked. There's something about it. It just feels like something, because it's, you know, it's a way for the Doctor to have his cake and eat it, so he can survive this situation without breaking history. And the solution, to me, it feels like something a very nerdy Doctor Who fan would come up with, which obviously applies to Steve Lyons, as it does to all of us, but, you know, he's definitely a bit of a fanboy expert, that one. But there's just something about it. It feels like the sort of solution you would get from a fan when you've had a story and it's had a solution that's not that great, and someone on a forum goes, well, actually, if you think about it, you could just do this with the TARDIS. And I always kind of like that about this. It feels like the sort of second draft solution, but we've got it the first time. So it just always tickles me. I don't know why. I just really like it.
It's, I guess it kind of feels like a bit of a cop-out, because the biggest, you know, we've talked about how this story does have its dark moments. Yeah. I think a lot of that stems from the fact that we get a Seventh Doctor who's kind of reserved to his fate. Like he's fairly convinced he's just going to die in Pompeii. And I think a lot of the story's drama comes from that. And it's a little bit of a pull the rug out from underneath it kind of resolution.
Yeah, it's you unusual.
Know, I'm not against it. I don't think it's awful. It certainly doesn't ruin the story for me. But I kind of think that the impact that the problem has is a lot. It's a lot more grand than that solution. It's a little bit inelegant, perhaps. But you know what the hell? We know that the Seventh Doctor and Mel survive because they've got to go on and, at the very least, do Dragonfire after this. So, yeah. But yeah, it's. I don't know. I just think the story makes a little bit too much out of it to have a slightly cop-outy ending. But again, the drama that you get because of that particular problem is that's the real story, isn't it? Not how it's all tied up nice and neat with a bow at the end.
Yeah. It's kind of about the sort of optimism of Mel to keep pushing and saying, let's do it.
Yeah, exactly, which is, you know, again, a very integral part of Mel's character, that sort of never-give-up optimism. So, yeah, it works. It works. There's no denying that. But, yeah, no, I like Fires of Vulcan. I do think it's a good story, and I'm very, very glad it exists. And it feels like we're sort of out of the early stages of Big Finish now. It feels like we're into a bit of a consistent routine of producing sort of pretty good adventures. The sort of the rough edges that were present in the first few releases feel like they're sort of long gone. So the range gets even more experimental with the next couple of releases then. So next on the list is The Shadow of the Scourge. It's a sidestep, which I believe is code for set in a different bit of the Whoniverse, and in this case it's the New Adventures. So what we essentially have here is a New Adventures story on audio, and it gives us something that there just isn't enough of, which is the Seventh Doctor and Ace and Bernice Summerfield. Big Finish have sort of always kind of actively shied away from this TARDIS team. I know they've done it in novel adaptations, they've done it in this, they've done it in another monthly adventure, and they did it in a couple of new adventures of Bernice Summerfield before she teamed up with David Warner. But I really cannot believe that this TARDIS team is just so underrepresented at Big Finish. So that's something I'm going to rant about. But before I do, give us your review.
Starting on surprisingly the same note you just said. Big Finish is surprisingly blasé about the Virgin New Adventures, given that they launched with one of the run's most successful characters, and so they have implicitly set their own stories in the same world. They've had a couple of goes at recreating that era, but due to poor sales, and people presumably thinking that they needed to read 61 out-of-print books to get it, that was all. It's a shame. I still think The Seventh Doctor and Bernice is an untapped era, even in the books themselves. What we get here is from the more well-known Dr. Benny New Ace run, and you don't need any continuity links to enjoy it. The trio arrive at a hotel in Kent, which is host to three conferences. Soon it's host to something worse than psychic mediums, tech bros, and a cross-stitch convention, as an alien force takes over everyone there. Worse than that, the Doctor seems to have helped. The story ticks a lot of boxes. There's Bernice, new, meaning older and more militaristic Ace, the Doctor not telling people things and secretly playing chess against the baddies, characters with a lot of angst. The Doctor having angst about his companions, the Doctor grandstanding against the baddies, mental landscapes, oblique references to other Doctors, a tease of regeneration, and some heightened violence. It's even got that sentimental streak that has often defined Cornell's New Adventure writing. but alas, none of his panto gags. It holds together well, imperiling the overconfident Doctor in ways that are perhaps more emblematic of the books than the TV show. It's evidently quite hard to build new Ace out of whole cloth, however. She seems a tad more efficient than she was on telly, but she communicates in much the same way as ever. A strange gag about Ace purposefully deafening herself means that Sophie Aldred spends roughly two episodes shouting, "What?" after every line. Lisa Bowman is dry and delightful as ever, playing Bernice. Thanks to her own ongoing run of adventures, she can jump right in here. The investment in the minor characters also feels like a nod to the books, and they're all quite compelling. The Scourge are not the most fascinating of villains, but with their interest in other people's angst, they do get us closer to what the books were like, since prose is inherently more interested in people's inner lives. It's a fun experiment, and it works, but it doesn't feel like a lot more than the sum of its parts.
I'm in total agreement with you. I'm really glad they did this, and I'm really disappointed that the concept of the sidestep wasn't something that continued. Like, can you imagine if this had sold a few more copies? We could have had a sidestep every year. That could have just been one release out of the year. And we probably would have seen more of this TARDIS team as well. It's such a shame that this, even to this day, is written off as a bit of a failed experiment. Now, we get two sidesteps here. We get this and the Holy Terror, and we'll talk about the Holy Terror in the minute. The Holy Terror is, I think, I'm not convinced there's a Doctor Who fan in the world that would argue the Holy Terror is not the better of the two. This is not a bad story, though. This is a very good and interesting story, and I like a lot of what it does, like the whole idea of it being set, well, to start with at least, in a hotel, and you know, there's conferences going on and all the usual stuff. It's good to hear Sophie Aldred playing a slightly different Ace. One big problem a lot of people seem to have with Big Finish at the moment, and indeed over the last 10 years or so, is she defaults back to being sort of season 25, younger child Ace. This is genuinely an effort to be older, battle-hardened, etc. I quite like the whole deafening thing. It's a good gag. It goes on a little bit too long, granted, but it's a fairly cool idea, and it's, as somebody who's not read a lot of New Adventures, it's something I can see Ace actually doing at a certain point in her life. I can, you know, being up for and that kind of thing. I like this one. I've got a lot of time for this one. It gets overshadowed by the Holy Terror, but I think that's slightly unfair. It just sort of unfortunately has the disadvantage of being before what a lot of people consider to be an absolute banger. I think the fact that the whole sidestep concept didn't sell well at this very early stage in Big Finish's life is probably the reason we don't get much of this TARDIS team. And that's a flipping shame, because I would inhale box sets of the Seventh Doctor and Benny. I really would. I'd be all over it. If they announced that set tomorrow, it would be the most exciting Big Finish news we'd had for years.
I don't know why they were so skittish about it. I mean, I understand the sales question, but just in general, the New Adventures was kind of, they sort of kept away from it in an almost superstitious way, to be like, oh, we don't want to associate with that. And I know they get a bit of a bad rap. I mean, I've read all of them, and the general opinion of them is that they're all very edgelord. That is true of some of them, but I think they grew up and they got better as they went along. And yeah, Bernice was just simply worth it. I mean, if you had any issues with the New Adventures, it was kind of, she was always good enough to kind of be worth revisiting. But yeah, even in the books, they didn't give us a lot of the Doctor and Bernice. They brought back Ace pretty promptly. And, you know, after Ace left, we got Chris and Roz, who I love, but that takes us away from having the Doctor and Bernice. So Yeah, it's bizarre that we've not gone back to that. And it's so bizarre as well because they've got Lisa Bowerman there and she's settled in. She's created this incredible audio character, completely synonymous. Like, you can't read the books anymore without imagining Lisa Bowerman. And yeah, I think that's just kind of sad. But when you read the there's that behind the scenes book on Big Finish, the first, I think, 50 releases or so, Lisa Bowerman sounded quite like she felt she was intruding in a way by playing in a release with Sylvester and Sophie. So I wonder if that had something to do with it. She kind of went, well, that's a TV TARDIS team, who she's acted with on telly, of course, she was in Survival. I wonder if she sort of said to some extent, I don't really think I should do that many of these because I feel like I'm butting in. And I know that when you look at this as a script, it does feel a little bit like it's not exactly clear how you make this a new adventure as opposed to just a general Seventh Doctor story, because so much of it was context and just the kind of stories they told. But yeah, I really do think it's a missed opportunity. I don't think it's too late. You could still do, you know, any old adventure, and it doesn't even need to be this era. You know, Bernice is still out there in Big Finish land, and the Doctor's still out there. They could still bump into each other for any number of reasons. So yes, I would also inhale a box set or two of Bernice back, and maybe Ace taking a vacation for a little bit. Not because I don't like Ace, just because I would love that focus on these two characters and what they bring out of each other.
Am I right in thinking we've only had the Seventh Doctor and Bernice once, you know, as just the two of them as a TARDIS team?
There's the Highest Science.
That's the one I'm thinking. Yeah.
I think that might be it. Yeah. Yeah. Even in the books, it's hardly any more than that. It's not very many. But yeah, that might be it in audio terms.
Ouch. Yeah. Well, yeah. To be honest, I find it surprising that Big Finish have never novel adapted Human Nature. Like, surely that's a selling point, you know, here the adaptation of the story that became a really good and successful adaptation with David Tennant, I know, that kind of thing. But
it's an interesting one. It would be, there are lots of differences, but there's a fair chunk of it is quite similar. So I don't know if they feel.
See, that is one that I have read. And there's also an audiobook of Human Nature, the book, read by Lisa Bowerman. So there's, it's a shame that there's not more Benny, but there must be reasons, there must be something, but hopefully it's something that will get corrected in the future. I can't believe that they're still kind of avoiding this. And talking of things that I still can't believe they're avoiding, let's move on to the Holy Terror and talk about the penguin in the room. Yeah. Okay, where to start with the Holy Terror? I don't know, so I'm going to let you do it. Go for it.
Okay. It's easy to forget how weird this one is. It's not the first Big Finish sidestep. The Shadow of the Scourge did the New Adventures. This one does comics, hence Frobisher is here. But somehow, I suspect the story it tells isn't particularly aimed at recreating an era. It's funnier and sillier than Doctor Who ever has been, but also darker and nastier in ways that are completely Robert Shearman. The comedy is completely disarming. We have a castle full of deliberately cliched characters trapped in traditions and routines. We get ridiculous situations like a king dying, his godhood being declared null and void, and people cheerfully recanting to avoid the automatic death sentence for having ever believed in him. Needless to say, organized religion does not emerge unscathed. It's not so much a biting satire as a tearing, chewing, blood everywhere one. The Holy Terror is a great example of tone, despite the schizophrenia of the story, with the performances all walking a tightrope between knockabout silliness and the genuinely sinister. Characters like Berengaria and Childeric discuss and mete out horrible violence, then rhapsodise about it when they're not obsessing over their silly narrative functions. It's one where the script is so explicitly targeted at something that everyone just seems to get it even more than usual. The last part is where things get really dark, and this is the bit that might lose people. The castle is a psychic torture device for a man who, for no apparent reason, murdered his son. He is doomed to repeat a cycle of violence and nonsense forever. This is perhaps better suited to something like Black Mirror than Doctor Who, but it's great that the show can expand to try these things. Sam Kelly is fantastic as the mostly unwitting prisoner, and also as his own monstrous son, a performance enhanced by the same kind of uncanny effect used in The Spectre of Lanyon Moore. It's bleak, messed up stuff, especially when it's cloaked in the slaughter of silly stereotypes, although they too are entrenched in an inability to love your own children, a sly working of the theme. Kelly and Colin Baker help find all the pathos we could need here. In amongst all that, you have the Doctor and Frobisher, a fundamentally silly pairing that just adds to the story's uncanniness. Robert Jezek is delightful as the shape-shifting penguin. Despite a knowingly corny accent, fun flipper sounds and bad jokes, he manages to believably grow during the story, learning a hard lesson about godhood. It's another strong one for Colin Baker as well, running rings around the fake characters but still showing empathy towards them, and extending that, perhaps controversially, to the mad murderer at the centre of things. You do get the sense that if he can handle a one-shot like this, he should be capable of anything. I'm not sure the Holy Terror is perfect. There's so much cynicism baked into it that it's hard to take away a lot about. There's so much cynicism baked into it that it's hard to take away a lot of care for its characters. But maybe that just means the listener needs to be more like Frobisher and care anyway. It's a bolt out of the blue as Shearman shows us what mad things you can do with the medium.
It's a runaway success, this story is, in everything apart from sales, apparently. And, you know, I sort of complained about the lack of Seventh Doctor and Bernice at Big Finish. The lack of the Sixth Doctor and Frobisher is just criminal. I mean, I know we've got the Maltese Penguin as well, but I've heard it once a long time ago. And if I remember correctly, the Doctor's not actually in it all that much. It's sort of like a Frobisher companion chronicle, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
And that's it. The demand's got to be there. It's one of the longest running jokes on any Big Finish page four and whatever I've ever looked at. We need to bring back Frobisher, and we do. Like, we've even had Robert Jezek at Big Finish this year. Just please do it. Come on. this story is just sublime. It's just fantastic. It is dark as hell. It's got a long running time as well. It's the longest up till this point, I think. Or is Apocalypse? Yeah, well, that's the point I was making. It you don't feel like you're listening to something that's at least half an hour long than the average release so far. There's a lot in this. It's really, really good. I honestly think the cast of this one's fantastic. It's a real shame that we never got the late Roberta Taylor in more Doctor Who, because she's absolutely fantastic as sort of evil mother type character. I wish there was more of a lot of things that are in this one. You're right, sort of it gets particularly bleak in the fourth part. The comedy sort of very quickly disappears. You know, we're having laughs about stereotypes and, you know, big talking birds that have been accidentally mistaken as deities and all this kind of thing. And then part four just kind of rips it all to pieces and gives you some of the darkest Doctor Who there's ever been. It's really, really, really grim stuff. And the cast are absolutely the thing that makes it work. Damn you, Big Finish listeners of what year was this? 2000, 2001? Because 2000, because you should have all bought this one at the time, and they'd have just given us loads of Sixth Doctor and Frobisher. Robert Sherman's definitely one of the best people that has ever written for this range. But again, I don't think I'm saying anything particularly controversial there. I think that most people listening to this are likely to agree with me. So yeah, all in all, The Holy Terror, I really like it, but I hate it as well because it kind of represents a huge, this is what you could have had. And we don't get anything like this ever again.
Yeah, it's a shame. It was one of the first Big Finish stories I ever heard, which was kind of setting me up in a way, because it's sort of, you're not going to get a lot more like this. But yeah, I mean, Robert Sherman is just such an exciting voice in these releases. He's one of those writers who just, he doesn't bother unless he's got something really interesting to do. Every release he does is quite special, and he hasn't done one for ages, and I think that's, maybe that speaks to that thing of just like, well, he hasn't had another incredible idea, and you know, why waste it? Why do something that's not going to be crazy off the wall like this? But yeah, I wish it was possible to get more.
If nothing else, just I'm glad they did have the confidence to do something like this still pretty early on in the run. Like they were still feeling the way, they were still seeing what worked and what didn't. Obviously, sales at the time told them that big, shouty, epic Dalek stories were a yes, and thoroughly entertaining stories about the Sixth Doctor and the big talking bird he travelled with were a no. So yeah, it's, I guess my biggest problem talking about Shadow of the Scourge and The Holy Terror is it is just a, it's a look at what could have been, and ultimately what we didn't end up with. So yeah, unfortunate, but at least we do have them. At least they do exist, and at least we can still enjoy them. I just wish there was kind of more there to follow it up. Because I do actually think that The Sixth Doctor and Frobisher could have genuinely made a fantastic TARDIS team. They're in a good book. They're in a good book called Mission Impractical by David A. McKinty. And that is a particular favourite past Doctor adventure of mine.
It's a lot of fun, that one. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. It's got Glitz and Dibber in as well, hasn't it, if I remember correctly?
Oh, don't even get me started on Glitz. Although that's I think, more of a, the actor didn't fancy it. But my God, we should have so much more Glitz.
Yes, we should have had so much Glitz in Big Finish. It's unreal. But no, okay, it's never happened. Should we move on to the mutant phase then?
Yes.
Dalek Empire Part 3. So this is, I believe it's a remake of an audio visual. Have I got that right?
You have, yeah.
Yes. So yeah, talk to us about the mutant phase.
Okay. This is a story I tend to remember fondly, but for whatever reason, it hasn't stood up to a re-listen this time. It's got good ideas, chiefly that there is a monster that poses an even greater threat than Daleks, which forces unusual alliances. Big Finish would come back to this a few times later on. The concept of Tharls working with Daleks is a good one, since it feels so intrinsically wrong. The mutant phase themselves are easy enough to visualise, especially when they fly around space and time in planet-sized formations. It's a weird, memorable image. The story crosses over with the Dalek invasion of Earth, which adds a bit of classic Who pedigree. There are some good performances, particularly Davison as a more irritable Fifth Doctor, and Sutton as a somewhat more action-ready Nyssa. She even punches a guy. Mark Gatiss has an entertaining cameo. Where this one struggles is the plotting and the communication of the plot. It's all a bit overcooked, with multiple locations and time zones, plans within plans, and paradoxes within paradoxes. All of this must be explained, along with the basic thrust of what the mutant phase are and what effect they've had on the Daleks and the universe, so there's a huge amount of exposition required, which means taking time out to talk it all through. This tends to push the mutant phase further away from the quite exciting action story at its heart. Solid enough twists like the secret Dalek Emperor and the cliffhanger where the Doctor fails to prevent an execution get a bit snowed under by all the catching up. There are several characters whose exits and presumably deaths I simply lost track of. Worst of all, it's one of those stories where potentially no amount of explanation is enough. Or so I must assume from the closing joke where Nyssa gives up trying to understand and the Doctor admits he thinks the way paradoxes don't make any sense is intrinsically clever. This is also known as lampshading. It's still an enjoyable bit of Dalek fodder with some exciting action beats, but it needed paring down quite a bit. Is it a thrilling, high-stakes action story or a puzzle about conflicting timelines? I'm not sure it can manage both.
One thing that this does that I do sort of particularly like and hasn't really been done in Doctor Who before is it sort of places the Daleks within a timeline and jumps around that timeline. You know, we get told that the Daleks from the Dalek invasion of Earth, and, you know, we do visit that period of history for a couple of chunks of the story, are earlier models. Whereas in the Dalek invasion of Earth, they were sort of later than the ones from the Daleks and that kind of thing, I think. So it's... Oh, no, they weren't, because the Daleks were destroyed for good in the Daleks, weren't they?
Supposedly.
Supposedly. Well, yeah, no, they were destroyed for good and we've never seen them again. so, but yeah, it sort of tries to work actually a Dalek timeline. It tries to sort of place everything in some level of order. And I think in the past, beyond sort of the continuity you get with Davros between Genesis and Remembrance, Dalek stories kind of just happened. So I find that interesting, and, you know, I find it interesting that we explore the Emperor here and that kind of thing. There's a lot that this story wants to do, and I think you're right, you sort of lose a sense of what it actually is doing because it has so many sort of things thrown in. But yeah, it's good that we get to do something with the Thals. It's good that the Emperor's in there. It's... You know, this is Big Finish's third Dalek story, and we're obviously already thinking about, you know, how can we make the Daleks bigger than they ever were in the classic series? Like, I know the new series has turned them into the evilest race that ever evolved ever, but in the classic series, they were just sort of a monster that turned up and bothered the Doctor slightly more than other monsters did. And, you know, okay, so, you know, Remembrance tried to sort of push them into being something bigger than they have been previously, and Genesis of the Daleks has the line about how one day they might become the supreme race in the universe that wipes everything else out and all this kind of thing. But, yeah, it feels like we're sort of consolidating what the Daleks are and slightly reinventing it a little bit, both, you know, Apocalypse element and this. Like, one thing that classic Doctor Who would never ever have done was the Dalek invasion of Gallifrey. And then, you know, here as well, we're doing things that classic Doctor Who would never have played with as well, going back to the time where the Daleks occupied Earth. I suppose I'm comparing it to the two other Dalek stories we've done already. I think this is probably my least favourite of the three so far. It's not bad. It's a good, fun little story. There's some excellent sound design. You know, we're getting experimental Nick Briggs here. I think this is the first time Briggs has kind of been allowed to be experimental with the sound design in a Big Finish. And he'd kind of pushed that a little bit further in, you know, some releases that we're going to get to in the not too distant future. But ultimately, it Yeah, I think it falls flat because I think that it's just trying to do too many things. It's the classic old adage of too many cooks, I think. But yeah, still enjoyable.
It is a lot of fun. I think you get a lot of bang for your buck. I mean, at this point in the sort of Big Finish run, I think there's a degree of you can't really go too far wrong with Daleks just because it sort of guarantees a level of drama and action just from them turning up. And, you know, once we get the actual Dalek Empire series, then you have this whole other, you can really dig in and kind of go, well, what's interesting about them and the way people respond to them. But yeah, even though these three Dalek stories we've had so far have had their ups and downs, I think they've all got that kind of, it's just quite exciting to have Daleks. It still is at this point in the series. You have to kind of forget that we've heard a million of them since and just go, it's 2001, how many Dalek stories have we actually had? And it's, yeah, I think they've all got something to recommend them.
And I suppose at this stage, you know, sort of placing myself in the mind of somebody that may have been listening to this in 2000, 2001, it's just exciting to have new Doctor Who still, surely.
Yeah.
You know, there's at this stage there's 15 more Doctor Who stories than there were 2 years before, and that's a good thing. That's exciting. I mean, I can't really say I was, what was I when this came out? 8 years old when this came out, so I definitely wasn't doing Big Finish then. But yeah, I think that perhaps the fact that this is just new Doctor Who was probably a really wonderful thing at the time, and maybe we weren't looking too closely at, you know, are the Daleks going to end up being overused? Because the fact that they're being used was probably a huge novelty still. Context is everything. Well, that's five more stories done. It's five more down, and still a hell of a lot to go. Well, we've got 260 releases to go still.
We'll be done in a few weeks. It's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I need to stop doing this. I need to stop counting down. But we're having fun anyway. I suppose that's what matters. Yeah. So yeah, it's been good to go through five more. I've really enjoyed all of these stories. And I'm just enjoying listening to it again and finding that I'm enjoying stuff more than I previously did. And I do think the Mutant Phase is one of those, actually. I think I got a lot more out of it this time than whenever I last heard it. So yeah, we'll leave it there. Obviously, the next time we do this, things are going to change a little bit because we're going to have the Eighth Doctor. And all of a sudden, new Doctor Who adventures are coming with what is essentially a brand new ongoing Doctor. Big Finish got the current Doctor, essentially, didn't they? So I'm looking forward to getting on to Paul McGann and getting on with Storm Warning. So I think next time we're going to do those four, aren't we? I think that's the plan. Yeah. We're going to hit the four McGann stories. We're going to do a little bit of a McGann special. So we've got that to look forward to. But in the meantime, I will say thank you and goodbye to you, Gareth.
That's all for now.
And we'll be back for more Spodcasting very soon. Goodbye now.